Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening to the NOLA Drink Show and tuning in this week, friends. I do appreciate it. As always, really good show, important show coming up for you here today. In the first part of the show, we're going to be joined by Robert LeBlanc, who is the founder and creative director, essentially the overall owner of LeBlanc and Smith Restaurant Group here in New Orleans. They operate five very fine establishments. Frequently we tape at their establishments. And Robert joins us to have a frank and honest discussion about the restaurant and hospitality industry with a little bit of a focus on New Orleans, but I think a lot of implications further afield than that due to the effects of the coronavirus. I do want to mention to people, I don't normally do this, as you know, we almost always tape the show in advance, and usually it's kind of irrelevant how many days in advance from when you're hearing it, but we did tape this interview on Saturday, March 21st. The reason why I tell you this, of course, is because information is constantly changing. By the time I've recorded this here in Louisiana, we now have a, not only in New Orleans, but in the state of Louisiana, a statewide stay-at-home alert. And I'll get to that in 1 second. But also, so Ro joins us. We have a very interesting conversation about the business on all kinds of different levels, the effect, how we see things maybe playing out, not predictions about when we get back to business, but how New Orleans might see a way to bounce back. But a lot of the grave implications for the hospitality industry, both here in New Orleans and abroad. Then in our podcast only segment, which I'm telling you this now also, we released that on Saturday because we felt it was important to get the information out as quickly as possible. Robert sticks with us, and then we're joined by LeBlanc and Smith Development Director Ali Grebe. And Ali has been doing a considerable amount of work researching resources for employees who have lost their jobs or have been affected by this situation, talking about, you know, things to have, paperwork to have in hand when you apply for unemployment, and some other aspects. If you want to hear that now, if you're hearing this on the radio, the podcast is going to be out very shortly. That will, of course, will include that. But you can go to our Facebook page at NOLA Drinks. You'll see a post there, one or two posts down, and it's been we shared the audio via SoundCloud, so you can hear that 15 or so minute segment with very specific information. Robert also shares information for restaurant owners, but I think a lot of this applies to small business owners in general. Just good ideas of things to have in hand if you are going to apply for an SBA disaster loan. So really, really important stuff, a very serious show. We hope to be bringing you some less serious shows as a distraction in the near future, but we felt, as we are such strong supporters here at the NOLA Drink Show of the hospitality industry of New Orleans, it affects a lot of friends of mine on a personal level. It affects all of us in the way we live. It affects our friends. It affects our neighbors in various ways. And as supporters of the hospitality industry and advocates, I like to think, of the industry, we wanted to do this show to bring you this information, including the podcast only segment that we call Another Shot with NOLA Drinks. You can go to our website. We'll have the full version of the show posted as soon as we possibly can. But again, go to our Facebook page, look for the SoundCloud post. It says Another Shot with NOLA Drinks and information for the hospitality industry. That is there. So if you have been affected, you might find some of this information useful. Getting back to the stay at home thing, please, friends, take this seriously. The social distancing stuff works. Okay, there's a lot of crackpot information out there. I think we know that the crackpot in chief in the White House, yes, I'm saying it, is not qualified to be giving advice on how to handle things. Listen to your local officials, listen to science, listen to healthcare professionals. Those are the people that will give you good advice on how to handle this. Please take this seriously. If you're a younger person in particular, please practice social distancing. It does work. We're all in this together. We need to slow the spread of this. Our health system, our healthcare system can handle this, and then we can get back to business as usual as soon as possible. So friends, please be responsible, and please, please take care of each other, and please heed competent officials. I can't emphasize that word enough, competent. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and then we're going to be back with our featured interview with Robert LeBlanc, and then being joined, on our podcast, you'll hear Ali Grebe as well. Come on back.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're going to stay here to soothe our soul. It takes all that long.
Thank you. goodbye, Joe. I got to go, me oh my.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Deese here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends, this week. I do appreciate it, as always. Tough times, as you know, right now for everyone, and certainly in the hospitality sector, restaurant, bar world, hotels and such. There's no exception, probably harder hit than most industries. And as you know, I'm pleased to be joined by my good friend and featured guest restaurateur here in New Orleans, Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith Rowe. How are you, buddy?
Doing well, bud. How are you guys?
We're hanging in there, man. Hanging in there just like everybody else. Thanks. Trying to figure out, well, you and I were talking a little bit before we started recording about things, and I'll borrow your quote, trying to figure out which way is up and which way is down, man.
I hear you, man. Are you guys hunkered down on the North Shore, or are you guys hunkered down here in the city because
here? Yeah, I'm actually, we're over here on the North Shore, and you and I are talking from my my home studio here. We're practicing social distancing as we're supposed to, and through the wonders of technology, have you on the phone. I always prefer to talk to you in person when we can sip on a bourbon and look at each other, because you're a good-looking guy and you like bourbon.
Like, look, I don't know about the good-looking, but I do like bourbon. It's a little weird. And if it wasn't so early in the day, I would have recommended we FaceTime this and have the bourbon, but it's, you know, it's a little early, so.
Hey,
in
full disclosure, man, I haven't showered yet, so my hair looks like Haystack Calhoun, so probably nobody wants to see that at the moment. I'm not having a good hair day, bro, right now.
Hey, look, man, one thing I've learned is if Brian Diaz is doing it today, everybody else can be doing it in 6 months, so you might be creating a new style.
Oh, goodness, man, we're all in trouble, more than we are right now. But yeah, man, I thank you for joining us, and obviously you and I have talked about the restaurant and hospitality industry kind of in New Orleans, but in general on numerous shows, and one of the things that I always really appreciate about what you bring to the table, Ro, is being frank and honest with me, being frank and honest with our listeners. You own 5 restaurants in New Orleans and were recently faced with some difficult choices in shuttering those temporarily. Can you kind of just tell us what went on? And you and I were talking a little bit before we started recording here about kind of why you made those decisions and why you thought they were the best decisions to make.
Sure. So when the coronavirus thing started really up in New Orleans, about a week prior, I started doing some research and looking at a lot of the markers and the indicators. And we had our team start to compare what programs available and just kind of figure out what the landscape. And the reality of it is our opinion and perception of what was going on changed literally 180 degrees overnight. We had a call with all of our leaders in the company on Friday midday. And at that point, the posture was before we were getting really strong evidence about self-isolation. And I know people were talking about doing that in spurts, but we genuinely thought, and with the government sort of keeping restaurants and bars open, we really thought that we were going to be a necessary outlet for people who no longer had sports to go to or watch on television, fundraisers, things along those lines. And so the opinion was that we were safe and we were taking measures. We were keeping people apart from each other, cleaning surfaces frequently, hand sanitizing. So we put a lot of measures in place. We really thought that people would need to get out and it would be a critical part of keeping people's social fabrics intact. And so we were planning on being slower, and we did a lot of projections kind of how we could survive doing half as much business by spacing people out. And we really took the approach on Friday collectively that it was going to be a social distancing. Overnight, Friday into Saturday morning, started reading a lot of cases and seeing things that were going on, and our opinion literally changed almost 180 degrees. And so what we wanted to do is we wanted our team to go through and research programs, policies, things that we could do to maybe keep our teams intact, keep people employed. We also wanted to research what was available from government support and assistance. We didn't get a lot of clean information at all, and there was really nothing being published at that point about loans or SBA relief or any ways that we could continue to run payrolls. And as everybody knows, loans, restaurant cycles, you know, you kind of, January is always slow and tough. February is pretty hit and miss, but can be okay. March, April, and May, literally most restaurants probably make half to 60% of their profits from the year in those months. And those months are so profitable, it kind of carries you, you know, through a slow summer and kind of a long upstart. It's really the cycle in New Orleans of restaurants being slow it lasts longer than people think. People think of the summer as June, July, and August, but for us, it's really June, July, August, and September. It doesn't really start getting to go again until October. Right. You have a really strong October. November is good, but can be choppy depending on the weather. December is good, but can be choppy depending on your orientation towards being a place for holiday parties, lunches, and dinners. And then January is pretty tough. So New Orleans has about five really tough months economically for restaurants, a couple really good ones, three really good ones, and, you know, one or two that are okay. And so we're just starting to get into our good ones. So we didn't have a ton of cash reserves to keep people on payroll for longer than 2 or 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And it was really important for us not to run up bills that we didn't know if we could pay for or not, and mm-hmm. speculate on revenues. And at the same time, we saw some of the government programs that were available, unemployment, and we felt like people would be more, but be better taken care of more soundly, even at a much lower compensation level, by transferring them over to some of these government programs and unemployment and things like that. And so our team at LeBlanc Smith went through those steps and those programs ourselves. And so we not only identified the programs, we also identified how to navigate those programs and put together a lot of information and content on how to do that. And so on Monday morning, and honestly, Brian, once we realized how severe the threat was and how rampant the virus was spreading, the most important thing to us was the health of our team, mm-hmm. the health of our guests, and the health of our community. And so it really wasn't a hard decision. It was a pretty easy decision. The hard thing is how do we make sure that our people are okay, because we don't have endless financial reserves to carry them indefinitely. And at that point, we had no idea how long this is going to last. And here we are a week later, we still don't have any idea how long it's going to last. But we made that decision. It was a pretty black and white decision. We felt like the best thing to do was do our part to keep everybody safe, keep everybody indoors. You can lose your business. You can lose a lot of money, but if you have your health, you always have the ability to kind of get it back. But if you don't have your health, there's no telling how that ends. And the economic loss is far less than the loss that we would feel if someone got sick, or even worse, someone unknowingly was sick and was a carrier and transmitted that disease to other people and got a lot of the people sick. Right. So it was a pretty simple choice at the end of the day. But what we did do is we did put together a lot of content and information that we could easily communicate to our teams how to go through these processes. And we're still in contact with our teams. I'm reading voraciously every day, as is Angel Beery, our CFO, just on the government support programs and the relief programs, and we're attacking those very aggressively. But that was the fundamental choice. We feel like the best thing to do is just keep everybody inside, keep everybody safe. It also gets this virus under control. And the sooner we can get it under control and kind of begin to approximate normal, we can start to identify how we rebuild our companies.
Right.
But with this speculative environment where we pivot to takeout and delivery in a time when people aren't really sure where their next paycheck's coming from, so people aren't able to spend as much money on those types of things anyway, it just didn't seem really smart to us it just wasn't worth compromising anyone's health to pursue those programs.
That makes sense.
I want to be clear. I'm not saying that judgmentally of anybody. Like, there is no right choice. There is no wrong choice. So everybody's got to make the choice that fits in line with their vision and their values and what their sense of taking care of their people looks like. So I don't say that judgmentally or righteously, but that's, we felt strongly about that.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that, because I think, you know, every business is going to be different. I want to frame a couple of things here real quick for listeners, because you and I are chatting, and it almost does seem like a week ago when you're talking about Friday and Saturday. You and I are chatting, taping this interview on Saturday, March 21st, and information changes by the hour. So when you were referring to Friday and Saturday, when you all are out here hearing this, we're talking about a week and a half ago, most likely. And so, and you know, by the time you actually hear this, some things may have things will have changed one way or the other. But let me ask you that question, because I know, you know, a lot of people were talking about the takeout model and the delivery model, the pickup model, so on and so forth. And I heard a number, and every business is going to be different, but one particular restaurateur in town was interviewed a few days ago and made a similar decision to you because of their business. They said that, you know, about 10% of their typical business was pickup and takeout, and 90% was dining in. And they were saying, you know, flipping that around basically, where we only have 10% and 90% of our business disappears, was not a viable model for us to remain open. So every place is going to be different, right? You have to have the physical location, all that. That model might allow some people to continue scaled back, but I just want people to understand that for every business owner, just it's not a cure-all situation to keep the doors open, is it?
No, it's not. And look, also, there's a case to be made. You know, while I think the best move personally is for people to stay in, there's a case to be made that there is a social benefit to that. I mean, people need that. I was texting a friend of mine who unfortunately lost her husband to cancer 3 months ago. And so she's a yoga instructor. She's got a yoga studio, and she took over her husband's restaurant, DTB, Alex Schubert, and she's trying to make a go of it while also having to homeschool her two kids. And so, you know, there's a lot of cases like that. Single parents or both parents have incredibly intense jobs who also have to now homeschool their kids. You know, there's a case to be made of being able to go and grab dinner for the family for $25 or $30 pretty easy without having to worry about procuring groceries and cooking it and the time that takes and the effort that takes that should be going to, you know, your kids and their education or just kind of keeping the lights on. So there's a tremendous social benefit to the ones who can kind of keep it open. The economic model of doing so is really hard, particularly if you weren't set up to do that before this shutdown.
Right. So physical location obviously matters. Your infrastructure obviously matters. And I'm just, and I appreciate
physical location, yeah. Makeup of the menu. So, you know, our friend Dan Stein is doing it. I'm not sure if he's doing it now with the city being shut down, but you know, Dan Stein, that makes a lot of sense. You know, he's got great sandwiches. You can get an amazing sandwich for $10 or $12.
Stein's Deli in the Lower Garden District for people out there don't know. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'll be just as good as it was there. You know, doesn't make a whole lot of sense at Cabin to get the Calabrian chili shrimp at $25 or to get the fish $27 or $28 or the steak at $28 or $29. And by the time you get home with it, it doesn't taste nearly as good as it would have in the restaurant if it was eaten there. And
right.
And even then, if it was the case, then you know, the reality of it is the restaurant business model is also built on you at least having a glass of iced tea, if not having a glass of wine with those things. And that's kind of where the economics work. The economics at restaurants never work just by selling food of those types of sit-down, dine-in establishments. So it's hard to make it work if you're not set up that way beforehand.
Right. And I thank you for saying that too, because we talk about cost centers, right? I don't want to go too far down this road because we're talking about other things, but beverages and alcohol in particular are a cost center that are more profitable typically in most situations than food. And that very much, even though, the reason why I'm bringing this up, Ro, is that, you know, people are also seeing, well, certain restaurants are allowed to deliver wine and beer now with their delivery orders, and people are allowed to get, you know, wine in a takeout situation. And that's nice, but that still doesn't solve that cost center situation overall.
It doesn't. And to be clear, I think this is something that's a huge misnomer for people who aren't in restaurant or bar industries who say the beverages are so much more profitable. The reason why it's more profitable is not because restaurant owners are marking up alcohol.
Right.
Or the cost of goods on alcohol is about the same. It might be a couple points less expensive than the cost of goods on food. Where food becomes more expensive, it just requires so much more labor to break down and produce those menu items, particularly when you're dealing with really fresh ingredients. So, you know, to make a Manhattan, you do have to pay a bartender to kind of pull it together and pull those ingredients together. But that pales in comparison to paying a chef, two sous chefs, Grand Marger, you know, paying all the guys on the line that have to come together to assemble that Calabrian chili shrimp dish that we just talked about at Cabin.
Right. And the whole supply chain is a very different consideration too, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that because I didn't want to talk too much about cost centers, but I want people to understand that.
No, I agree. Yeah. But I think that's a lesson that we need to kind of talk about just so guests don't feel like they're getting completely hijacked on alcohol costs. The cost of the actual product is not very different between alcohol and food. It's just the cost of producing a cocktail or a glass of wine versus the cost of producing a dish is significantly higher.
Yeah. Right.
In the case of food.
Right. Cool. Ro, let's do this, man. Let's take a brief break here, and then we're going to come back, chat a little bit more with you, and we'll continue the conversation. Can you hang on for a second, buddy?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Deese here with WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. iTunes and in podcast land, wherever you may be. We are chatting with Robert LeBlanc, who is the founder and creative director, I believe is your technical title with LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group. Is that not the case?
I think it's the case, man. You know, that's the marketing team that comes up with all those titles. So it sounds like it works to me.
Hey, I mean, I just know you. I've known you for several years, so I just know you as the guy who typically wears salmon-colored pants in warmer seasons on Fridays.
Yeah, and hugs and high fives.
And hugs and coronavirus. High fives, exactly. Looking forward to being able to do that with you again soon, my friend, for sure.
No doubt.
Well, thanks for making time, buddy, again. And, you know, we were talking about some interesting things in the previous segment. And one of the things that I want to frame in this segment here a little bit, and I think most of us that are listening here in New Orleans know this, at least to some degree, of how dependent we are both culturally and economically on the hospitality sector. And I'll throw a couple numbers your way and then let you address those two things if you would. But, you know, there's the Hospitality Labor Union is currently projecting that up to 90% of all members of the industry, and that's pretty broadly defined. We're talking about bars, restaurants, casinos, I think, you know, movie theaters, gyms, things like that. But 90% of the members could lose their job over this. Now, that's nationwide, but we're talking about here in New Orleans, where I believe 90 to 92,000 people, which for a city of our size is significant, work in that industry. Brookings Institute just put out a report, Ro, that said that you know, New Orleans is has the third highest percentage of jobs in sectors most at risk from recession, meaning the hospitality industry being a large chunk of that. And the last thing I'll kind of throw at you, this was from the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics, their quarterly census, and there's different ways to measure this, but one of the ways they looked at this was the largest metro areas dependent on people going out and therefore, you know, engaging the hospitality and leisure industries. And the top four, which skew much harder or, you know, more important than others, are Vegas, Orlando, New Orleans, number three, and Honolulu, number four, and then everything else kind of looks the same after a big gap after that. So my point is simply that it's part of our economic fabric significantly, but it's also part of our cultural fabric. And I know you're a big part of that and a big advocate of what both of those aspects mean.
Yeah.
So,
it's interesting. We're kind of facing a double whammy in that, you know, the most dangerous thing people can do right now, given what we know about the coronavirus at present, is congregate. And the hospitality industry is driven by people leaving their homes and congregating in communal settings with other people. And that's incredibly dangerous. It's almost a double whammy for us, though, because we are now looking at a very uncertain economic environment. And when people have less money, when the economy's not as strong, people go out to eat less, they conspicuously consume less, corporations spend less money on business travel, on meetings and events and conventions. So we're getting hit twice pretty hard, and it's a backbreaker for New Orleans. It's not just an economy for New Orleans, to your point. It is culture. It's what New Orleans is known for. It's the lifeblood of New Orleans, and it really always has been. People coming and feeling that sense of, I see you, I love you, that exists here in New Orleans. Everyone talks about having fond experiences, or people love New Orleans. They have a hard time qualifying verbally exactly why that is, but it's because people in New Orleans genuinely want to make sure that others who visit here feel completely at home and feel a sense of love. And you do things here in New Orleans from your soul to touch other people. It's not just about getting them to consume food and drinks or getting them to see things. It's about getting them to feel things. And so it's not just a threat to our economy. It's a threat to the entire city, the fabric of the city. I don't know what this city looks like without our ability to do that, because people are no longer coming because it's not safe to travel, or people no longer have the means to go out to eat on a Friday night. It's scary, and it's not just monetarily. And to be honest, if you ask most restaurateurs, most people involved in tourism and hospitality here in New Orleans, that's probably the bigger threat or the bigger fear. We can all figure out other ways to rebuild ourselves, to get into other industries, to get other jobs, to replace our earnings in some form or fashion. Can't replace the fabric of the city that's as magical as New Orleans in terms of how we express ourselves and our love for people in the world through our hospitality.
Yep. Ro, are you there?
Yep.
Okay. You hear me? Yeah. Thank you for saying that, because that's the point that I want to make, especially for listeners that are hearing this on the podcast outside the area. And I always say this, you've heard me say this probably 100 times, that it's a tapestry here. The music, the food, the drink, the hospitality, the vibe, you know, as you said, the love, all of that is that makes up who we are, and you can't separate these things. It's very easy to talk to musicians about food. It's very easy to talk to chefs about music in almost every instance, because it's all so intertwined here. That is, as you said, that is the fabric of who we are here. That's what we export, but that's also in our soul, right?
No doubt.
Tell me this, Rodi, if you think, I mean, we know, we've done shows before talking about how, you know, it's at the restaurant industry, restaurant business anywhere is a difficult business. But here, you know, we are a seasonal town, I think. And you mentioned this in the first segment that you were on, that, you know, this is a high time. This is why it hurts even more, is that this is when people typically are able to make some money if they've run and planned their business accordingly, can, you know, anticipate the slowdown that inevitably happens every summer, and then, you know, reemerge in the fall when the good times come back. And in this instance now, I think, you know, this is obviously hitting at the worst time. We've already had a lot of closures. You and I have talked a lot about how, are we oversaturated? We can argue that or not, but we got a lot of restaurants, and we always go through this boom and bust kind of situation in the summer months come. And I said to you before we started recording that, you know, my view is we were going to, obviously, as we always do, lose some restaurants over the summer. But what are your thoughts about just with this going on? Are we going to also lose people that just maybe they could open, but are just not going to have the heart to do it again?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think it's going to be a result of two phenomena that occur, some simultaneously. I think you have a lot of people who have been doing this for a long time, let's say a couple of years. As everybody knows, summer was really, it hasn't been as strong of a year. And so I think you just get the fatigue. It's like it's just too much work, it's too much stress. It's anxiety for too little financial reward and too large of a financial risk. And so I think people are just going to kind of say, look, I'm out. And I think the other side of it is you'll have people who are really committed and dedicated, can't mentally take to.
Hey, Ro, do me a favor. You're breaking up a little bit. Let's do this. I want you to hold that last thought. Let's take a brief break here on the show, and then we'll clean up our connection, and we'll have you pick right back up where you left off. Can you hold on for one sec?
Yep.
All right, friends. So we're going to take a little break here on the Nola Drink Show. Come on back.
Well, after I'm through, this back.
Every afternoon when I wake up. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening into the Nola Drink Show, friends, this week. I do appreciate it. As always, we are chatting with, as you know, with Robert LeBlanc, who is the proprietor of LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group. They operate five very fine establishments here in New Orleans, and we were kind of breaking up there the last minute or so, but teeing this up again, I had asked you the question about, you know, we always lose restaurants in the summer for different reasons. Typically it's economic, sometimes it's having the heart to continue, but with this sort of blow during this particular time, which is typically profitable, you know, my speculation is we would have lost restaurants as we always do in the summer. But I'm just at, you know, if you're taking the temperature of some of your fellow restaurateurs, you know, are people just going to have even less heart, do you think, to come back, even if maybe they would have the means to do so?
Yeah, I think we're going to lose a lot of people due to fatigue and just the risk not being worth the reward. When things are great, the reward's not fantastic. When things are bad, as we're learning right now, the risk is tremendous. So I think you'll lose some of that. And then I think you'll lose people who have the heart and who are willing to come back, who just can't put the financial means together, not only to carry the losses or to pay past bills, but also to restock initial inventories and to bring teams back, but also to cover the losses for the 5, 6, 7 months of runway that I think it'll take for us to get going again. I mean, I think this is going to create an interesting phenomenon. First of all, I think as far as restaurants are concerned, people are going to be a little cautious in the beginning of running back out and congregating in rooms with a bunch of people that they don't know very well, and having people they don't know prepare their foods with their hands due to having a little bit of shell shock at the risk of being infected with this coronavirus. I think the other thing that's going to happen a bit is that people will understand the joys of cooking at home and how nice it is to actually slow down and have dinner with your family. They'll probably learn how much more cost effective that is, not nearly as expensive to do that. They'll absolutely learn about how much healthier it is to do that in most cases. And so I think that this will be a permanent paradigm shift a little bit, and that restaurants will probably become a little bit less popular overall because the opportunity cost isn't that bad. It's pretty nice sometimes cooking at home with your family and enjoying a nice meal without being rich, and it's certainly nice to save that money. And I also think that this is going to affect the economy, and the economy is going to take a while for the economy to come back, and particularly in New Orleans. I don't think as soon as this is behind us and it's safe for everybody to go back outside, I don't think corporations are going to continue to spend tens of millions or hundreds of millions on conventions and travel and expense accounts. I think it's going to take a long time for us to get back on our feet, economically speaking. And so I think restaurants not only need to have the capital to cover past losses to reopen soundly and solidly, but we have to have the capital to carry 5, 6, 7 months of potential losses or not making any money with a higher debt load. You know, the SBA is going to provide some resources, but those are loans. I mean, the money that everybody's getting, it's not free money. It's money that has to be paid back. It's interest that's incurred. So I think the long way of saying yes, unfortunately, I think we will see a large percentage of restaurants that are currently open not reopen on the other side of this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. I do. There's going to be a big shift in how we do things. And I mean, if there's a place, let's maybe turn this to some hopeful things, you know, here in New Orleans, if there's a place that hopefully we can actually bounce back here quickly when we can open our doors and might be, you know, this is pure speculation on my part, maybe wishful thinking, but the type of situation where if New Orleans opens itself up, gets itself back open, that we will be an attractive spot for people when they do spend that money on conventions, when they do want to, you know, experience tourism, when they do want to experience camaraderie, culture, so on and so forth. Maybe we'll be a desirable reputation that sits, or excuse me, a destination that sits at the top of the heap. I don't know how you feel.
I think we'll be the most desirable, truly. You know, people are leery, don't have the means to travel to Europe. This is the most European city in the country. The other thing is New Orleans, we've been through this twice with Katrina and the BP oil spill. So we are incredibly resilient and we know how to bounce back. And so I think that we will bounce back, not just robustly, but I think we'll have a sense of calm and confidence that is going to allow us to be a leader in how we recover from this, at least from a hospitality sector standpoint. So I think people are going to want to come to New Orleans because we have the joie de vivre. And I think we have the resilience to know that, I mean, you know, this is New Orleans. It'll be New Orleans hospitality industry's third life in the span of less than 20 years. So I think we have a chance to be a real leader in this and kind of, and to set an example for the rest of the country on how to rebuild that part of the economy.
Well said. That's really well said. Thank you. Let me ask you this, Ro. So one of the things that you guys were, I think you're still doing this, right? That if people want to buy gift cards from LeBlanc Smith at the establishments or from the establishments, that you guys are giving a portion of the proceeds. Is that correct to the team members?
Yeah. So we're giving 75% of the sales to team members. And so, you know, if you buy a $100 gift card to use when we reopen, $75 today goes to our team members. The $25 we hold on to, it allows us to pay for the food and the drinks that you will consume when you come in for meals. And so, you know, that's another word in restaurants that we all have to be careful about: proceeds versus sales. People use proceeds to define that in a pretty shifty way. Sometimes that means profits, and as we all know, sales do not equal profits. And so we are giving 75% of the sales of those gift cards to our team members to try to do our part to tide them over. And we're working on some other cool ideas. And I think you've seen a lot of creative efforts for restaurants to do things and suppliers to do things to support displaced hospitality workers in this time. And I think that's cool. And look, as with any tragic situation or as with any difficult situation, you see a lot of really bright spots of humanity. And there's a lot of really small things that happen on a daily basis that will give you the sense that we'll be much better off than right. We think we are.
Right. I think there's lots of things that are coming out. I'm having so many interesting conversations with friends of mine in the industry about, you know, ideas for just even for the show that we're talking about doing here, and kind of laughing about it a little bit because, like, why didn't we think about this before during normal times? This would be a good idea during normal times. So taking some of those lessons learned and moving forward and maybe making us putting us all in a stronger position.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you this, Ro, and we've got about 4 minutes left before we close out the portion of the radio show, and then we're going to bring in Ali Grebe, who is a good friend of ours and, you know, works for you as your director of development. Now he's going to share with us some of the resources and things. That's going to be in our podcast-only segment, Friends, Another Shot with Nola Drinks. So if you're in the industry and you're looking for some information and things, we want you to stay tuned for that. Go get the podcast on your favorite podcast platform. But do you think a lot of people, kind of bring it back for what we were talking about before with the tough summer months, and do you think a lot of people, and maybe you already have a view on this of what you guys are going to do, might wait until, say, you know, just pick a number, but say in 2 months, maybe I'm being idealistic, but 2 months, we're able to kind of start to get back to normal. Do you think a lot of people might just actually wait until the fall to reopen because of opening during the summer not being a great idea?
No, I don't. And I'll tell you why. I think part of the hook on a lot of these government programs through the SBA, I mean, a lot of that is intended not to get money just to businesses. It's intended to get money to businesses so that they can go back to buying goods and hiring people. So right. I think the government, if they provide all this relief, they're going to expect businesses to deploy it. Secondly, I think there's a real risk to doing that, in that if some restaurants, bars are getting open in, let's say, July 1, and you're going to wait until September 1 because you're a smarter business guy and you're going to do it in a way that's more profitable to you, it's just going to be really hard for you to compete for decent team members if Nice. You're opening 2 months behind everybody else. In particular, if you are doing that just to make more money or to save losses when people are hurting so badly. So it's I don't think it's going to look good. And I also think it's not going to be in the spirit of all of these government relief programs. So I think it would be pretty short-sighted for somebody to do that. Mm-hmm. Although I can understand why people would consider doing so.
Great. Thank you for saying that. And you actually kind of anticipated, we had about 2 minutes left row here. Labor force, because we've always kind of had a little bit of a push and pull, right, in the city of high unemployment, but also the service industry oftentimes needing labor. So maybe a positive that comes out of this is that we'll have a more even situation that way with labor. What do you think about that?
I think so. I think we will. I think we'll also have a stronger sense of gratitude for labor. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll even out a bit. Yes. I think you will see talent more readily available. I think it's going to be our responsibility to still compensate them at the higher hourly wages we were compensating them before this happened. I don't think we should see a pullback in the average wage because there's more people willing to work. I know typically that's how it works, but I don't think that's a good thing for the industry if we start paying people less because we can. But to get back to your first point, the other reason why, I guess the more fundamental reason why I think people aren't going to wait until after the summer's over to reopen is, even though this is a business and even though we have to be responsible, and if we don't have profits and cash flow, we can't afford to stay in business. What drives nearly all of us in this industry, particularly here in New Orleans, is a love for what we do. And people are already going stir crazy, being shut down for a week, not being able to serve guests, not being able to cook for them, not being able to make drinks for them. So we're going to want to get back in the ball game as soon as someone tells us we can, even if there's no money to be made for a little while. So I think as soon as they allow us to reopen, whether it makes financial sense or not, I think you're going to see a bunch of people who love to do what we do rush back out to do that thing that we love as quickly as humanly possible.
Beautiful. Ro, do me a favor. We got about 30 seconds left before I have to close out the portion of the radio show. You guys are not open now, but tell people how they can connect with LeBlanc Smith and perhaps purchase a gift card.
Yeah, so the easiest way, www.leblancandsmith.com. It links to all of our venues. That's Sylvain, Mobar, Barrel Proof, Cabin, Longway Tavern. And you can just pick your favorite and go on that website, and you can buy a gift card online. We'll deliver it to you, and as soon as we get back open, and we will get back open, you can use that gift card at full face value, but we'll use those proceeds today for a fund that we're kind of paying out every 2 weeks to the team members who have been displaced by this.
Awesome. Thank you, buddy. Stick around. You're going to stick around for another Shot with Nola Drinks. We're going to bring Ali Grebe in, your Director of Development. Friends, if you're listening on the radio, we will continue to share information with you on our Facebook page and, of course, on the show. But do go get the podcast, please. I encourage you to do that. The next part of the conversation, as it always is going to be very, very interesting. Ro, thank you, buddy. I do appreciate it. Stick around. And friends, if you
thank
are...
Thank you, man.
Hey, my pleasure. If you are listening on the radio, remember, especially now, be kind to one another. As always, use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all. We'll be right back.
shy. What are you doing in a place like this? I said, I call your name, but no one came. Now I see you become just like the company you keep. And he said, all these saints and all these sinners will try.
Yep, another shot with Noel Drinks, friends. Thanks for sticking around. I do appreciate it. As always, a very important show here that we are conducting with Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, and we're about to be joined by Ali Grebe, as you know, their director of development, who's going to give us some specifics on navigating the situation if you are someone in the hospitality industry affected by layoffs and other considerations. And Robert is also going to give us some information if you're a business owner about SBA stuff. Of course, this was taped the other day. We have been desperately trying to get caught up on some shows. Other things considered that I'm dealing with here that have kind of turned our schedule upside down a little bit. We got the podcast segment out with that you're about to hear several days ago because we wanted to get that to you, but you'll hear it here now. I just want you to know that this was a handful of days ago. And of course, as the news changes by the hour these days, but stay tuned for that. And well, I'll be back with more after we complete the interview with those guys. Here we go. All right, everybody, up another shot with Noel Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in, friends, to the show this week. I do appreciate it. As always, we are chatting with Robert LeBlanc, who is the founder and creative director of the restaurant group LeBlanc & Smith here in New Orleans. And as promised, we're bringing in also their director of development and a dear friend of mine, Ali Grebe. Ali, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Hanging in there just like everybody else. And as Ro and I were talking about earlier in the program, you know, just trying to figure out which way's up and which way's down. How about you?
Right.
Same?
Same. Well, great. Same. I don't think there's anyone who's not in that boat right now.
No, there is not. So all preaching to the choir, of course, here. I love to say that statement, but never is it truer than right now. Ali, you've done a lot of work for not only the restaurant group and kind of heading up this effort with LeBlanc & Smith to navigate a lot of the changing landscape, the red tape, how people can receive benefits, what they can do if they've lost their job or all these other sort of things that relate to the workforce. And you're also sharing it openly and publicly for everybody in the industry. And I just wanted to actually kind of give you the floor, because hopefully there are some industry people out there that are listening to this really anywhere, but also here in New Orleans that, you know, can maybe glean some information from this of how they can get through these next few, hopefully next few weeks. So then we can, you know, get back to doing what we do.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think first and foremost, the important thing that I've been noticing is that there's a lot of information kind of swirling around out there. And, you know, it's all with good intentions, and a lot of it is really important. A lot of it is very specialized. So just kind of going through the path of figuring out what are actually resources, because time is of the essence. With some of these grants right now. So for the hospitality industry in particular, I've been trying to help with some of that beginning legwork to figure out what actually is available, what's linking back to another grant, because a lot of these resources are working in conjunction with each other. So mm-hmm. a lot of them circle back to one place. So while there are a lot of resources, it is kind of important, hopefully, to help the industry spend time going down the correct avenues rather than, you know, kind of going on a wild goose chase, which is you know, possible. You can spend hours, really.
Sure. With the changing landscape out there, these things, the information keeps changing. Programs are being deployed and altered and so on. I mean, Ali, are we kind of talking about two things here, too? Are we talking about, so there's maybe business mechanisms that, for example, LeBlanc and Smith can take advantage of to help the business and help the workforce in particular. But then we're also talking about things for individuals that if they've been laid off or lost their job that they can do. Kind of two avenues, right? Or is that a mischaracterization as
well?
Yeah,
there's two avenues. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, you know, for instance, things that folks might not know about. There's a CORE grant program, which is qualified for hospitality families who have, you know, at least one child. So, you know, if you're not looking, you can try to apply for that as just a, you know, hospitality industry member, get all the way through the process and realize that it was for families and that you're not eligible. Or there's some of these, for instance, one that just started this morning, which is Saturday morning at 9 a.m., was through the United Way. However, you need to be earning below $30,000. So for some of our, you know, it's really something you have to take a look at to make sure, one, the system is already so crowded. So I'm trying to help the industry know early on what they're eligible for.
Okay.
And help, one, ease the system, but two, make sure that they're finding the right path to the resources that apply to them.
Okay, so great. That's a critical first step in all this then is determining what you are and what you are not eligible for, right? And that's somewhat correct. Confusing still. Okay. So
it is, yeah.
Ali, can I ask you this too? And just because I'm sure people are going to want to, one, information keeps changing quickly, but will you be willing to share like this so that I can continue to share some of the stuff you've been putting out on our Facebook page? That people can continue to find that and keep up to date with your research?
Oh, of course. Yeah. So we made a kind of New Orleans-based resources. It has some national resources on there as well. Basically anything that's available to the hospitality industry that I found, and it's in no way conclusive, and I'm always happy to add to it. But I am trying to go through the, you know, vetting process to make sure these are all actual avenues. I'd love to share it. It's here for anyone who needs it. And also, you know, to the best of my ability and our ability really as a company, we're happy to share resources as much as we can. You know, we're all in this together. So our livelihood kind of depends on using community at this point. Please reach out to me, reach out to anyone, LeBlanc and Smith. We're happy to help in any way that we can and share this resource and anything else that we come across.
Okay, great. Let me ask you two questions. Maybe this is a good way to frame it. And we mentioned this earlier when I was chatting with Ro that we're taping this interview. Normally I don't do this. I don't tell people specifically, but we're taping this interview on Saturday, March 21st. And the landscape does keep changing. So that's why I'm telling you this. You might be hearing this 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days later on the podcast, whenever you're listening. So I do want you to be aware of when we're taping this and talking about this. But Ali, let me ask you this. If you are today on Saturday, March 21st, if you are an industry member who has been laid off, maybe tell people I know it's not going to apply to everybody, but a general sense of a trajectory that they might want to follow. And then similarly, if you're a restaurant, some things that you found, maybe some places to start looking and things to consider and, you know, get you going in the right direction down the right path for those two sets of folks.
For sure. Definitely on the employee side, I can help out. I think after, you know, I speak to this, Ro can definitely speak to the business side as he's been kind of focusing his energies on that. From the employee perspective, I know that folks are, as of today, really, really struggling with the unemployment website. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I have really been trying to stress to our team and again to any hospitality worker out there, the most important thing that you can do to prep yourself to get through these, for lack of a better term, barricades when it comes to getting these resources is to have your W-2, a valid ID, a tax return if you have it from the previous year, and your last pay stub. And if you, you know, preempt, there's going to be more coming down the pipeline. there's going to be resources that come up every day. They're all asking for the same thing.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm trying to definitely preach the importance of having your documents together, keep it in one spot on your phone or on your computer, because, you know, these are going to be the same things that you need to use. As far as unemployment goes, benefits, in order for those who, which is a majority of people who are let off this week, there's not a deadline of today by Saturday by 5 p.m. To sign up for unemployment. But if you are looking for your benefits to start within 5 days, this is maybe a moot point, but Saturday would be the last day. Today at 5 p.m. would be the last day to sign up to have them immediately starting. But that just means if you sign up later, you're going to be put into the next pool.
Right. So it goes back to the previous week's lost wages. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then otherwise, and, you know, this isn't just for the hospitality industry, but the New Orleans Business Alliance Relief Fund is working on grants from $500 to $1,000. Again, a lot of these have, a lot of them go down to socioeconomic, just kind of what your, on paper, what it says that you're making, which, I mean, we both know in this industry, what's on paper is very different from what people are bringing home.
Right.
Without sounding completely insensitive, it is, that people should be using their real numbers that it says on their documentation, as that's going to be helpful to them in this time.
Gotcha. Advantageous. Yep. Gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, for, I sure. don't know how to say that without,
well, I think we, you know, yes, I mean? It's all good. Yeah.
And then, like I said, and you know, hopefully you can find a way to share this with your, base, but the Google Doc that we've made really does have, you know, there's the National Bartender Emergency Assistance Program. It's helpful, but things like that are getting super overcrowded super quickly. So the other thing I'm kind of urging folks, as things come, keep your ears out, have your documents ready. I know I sound like a broken record, but time really is of the essence on this stuff. So, you know, there's the pool is really large, so it's important to have your stuff together.
So, sure. Ali, sorry to interrupt. Just so people are clear, you're talking about the U.S. Bartenders Guild Emergency Relief
yep.
Fund, right, which is designed mm-hmm. to help bartenders. Don't have to be a member. And actually, you answered my question about that, because I know that that it was easy to imagine that was quickly going to get oversaturated. It is a place where people can go if people want to donate. People can donate to that fund, though, correctly, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and all of these links, you know, definitely as hospitality professionals, share them with your communities, because it's going to be, you know, like I said earlier, this is a community effort at this point. Our best chance for resources are going to be community based. And since our community is hurting, we're going to really need to be connecting with our neighbor communities who are still able to continue working and that kind of thing. So share these resources, because they are essentially, you know, community funded. Mm-hmm. It's important to just keep the word out there. And, you know, also as we go further into these weeks, like I said, new resources will pop up, but it's important to, I think in my opinion, it's truly just my personal opinion, that as a community, we are sharing our resources as well, and being smart about what we need rather than what we want. And, you know, it's a lot of people. So, you know, it's important to make sure that we're, you know, taking what's needed for us and kind of sharing what we can, you know?
Okay, great. Ali, thank you. Absolutely. Yeah. Ro, do you want to take 2-3-4 minutes and either sort of broad stroke stuff, or if you have specifics, if you're a restaurateur dealing with what you all are dealing with, what would you tell people?
Same exact thing Ali's saying. I think the most important thing is to get all of your documents for these SBA loan programs together before you apply, because when you're trying to pull them together in the middle of the application, it becomes clunky. The application is becoming incomplete, and it's just going to take it longer, and it can be harder for them to process that. So the document specifically that people needed, the last 3 years of personal tax returns, the last 3 years of the tax returns of the business for which you're filing. If you don't have 2019 returns done, you need a 2019 P&L, a 2019 balance sheet.
Okay.
You need your 2020 budget and projections.
Okay.
And you're going to have a business debt schedule. So basically all of the money that you owe on an ongoing basis for equipment loans, things along those lines, your cost of goods, that are still outstanding. And then the last thing that you're going to need a thorough personal financial statement. And if you go to SBA.org, they have a personal financial statement format template that you should use. Fill that out in its entirety before you start the application process, because when you apply, they're going to make you fill that out again through the application. But
okay.
If you have all that stuff on a record, it's easy to reference, and you can get through the application really easily. If you don't have all those documents, it's almost worse to apply sooner with incomplete documents or an incomplete application than it would be to apply a little bit later with a complete set of documents. And to Allie's point, anything else you might pursue, whether that's traditional bank lending, if it's investors, other avenues that you might pursue for some short-term relief or some cash to carry you over, they're going to require most of those same documents. So just go ahead and create one file of those documents. We call our file folder COVID, and have those documents in that file for easy and ready reference when you need them.
Okay, great. I thank you both for sharing that information. It's very, very valuable to people. And friends, again, we will try and share as much. We'll glean the efforts of what you guys are up to and share it with people as we can. Do me a favor, guys, before we close out one more time, Ro, if you want to do this, just tell people where they can connect with LeBlanc and Smith and your fine establishments, both now to get gift cards to benefit the staff, but then also when doors are back open, how you'll be ready to see everybody's smiling faces on both sides of the bar and out there on the floor and in the kitchen.
Sure. Yeah. So our website is LeBlancandSmith.com. That's L-E-B as in boy, L-A-N-C as A-N-D, Smith, S-M-I-T-H.com. We have Cabin, we have Mobar, we have Barrel Proof, we have Soul Longway Tavern. And people can click through our main site to those individual restaurants. And if you buy a gift card, 75% of the sales of those gift cards goes to a fund that we're dispersing to employees every 2 weeks just to help them offset minor expenses to the best that we can. And we will be open. We'll be open as soon as they let us open again. So we look forward to seeing you. And those gift cards, another reason for you to come back and see us as quickly as possible once we get back on our feet.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Allie, Ro, I really appreciate your time. And thanks for taking a few minutes out of what is certainly your busy day. Thanks so much.
Thank you, man. You're all world. We love you, bud.
Hey, we love you guys, too. Friends, we're going to take a brief musical interlude here, and I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show, friends, this week. I do appreciate it, as always. Again, a programming note, we did tape this the other day, and as I mentioned when we kicked off the Another Shot segment, things keep changing by the day, changing by the hour. We've been trying to get caught up on some shows. Later on, the story will come out. We had all kinds of stuff planned around Bourbon Fest. I've talked about a little bit. We were supposed to bring you a show from Seattle that got canceled. It was actually meant to be up there. We're all, you know, obviously in the same boat, so small violin there. But so we're doing kind of what we can, and we got our last two shows out pretty quick. This one took us a little while to get out because, well, radio is not the only thing that I do, and my wife and I own a decorative arts business, so that is our bread and butter, and we've been trying to work through keeping that going. And again, preaching to the choir, we're all on this boat together. So I hope you found the show very interesting. I hope you found some of this stuff useful. And we will continue to bring you some stuff. We do have a really good show coming up for you next week, perhaps a little more levity and a little lighter. We will talk to Jackie Summers, Jack from Brooklyn, who started a very cool virtual happy hour a while back. It's been recognized by the New York Times and a few other folks who are talking about the importance of what they're doing there and how they're going about doing it. A lot of people are being very creative right now. Jackie is obviously a luminary in the industry and is doing some really cool stuff. And we are also joined by my good friend, Donnie Ronan, and Donnie being the noted spirits expert that he is. We spent some time and some fun time doing some cool stuff, talking about, you know, kind of easy home bar stuff or some things to think about where you don't need a ton of ingredients to do some fun things when you're making drinks at home. And that's what a lot of us are doing. So, yeah, it's not going to all be super serious stuff. We're going to bring you serious stuff, and we're going to try and continue to bring you creative stuff and speak to our current condition. For instance, this is our parting shot, as we've been doing. Sometimes we try and comment on things with a bit of a choreographed response, maybe not always great. But this particular time, all I really want to do, given what we're talking about here, is give a shout out to my oldest stepdaughter, Tyler. Tyler is an ICU nurse here in New Orleans. And depending on when you're hearing this, hopefully things will get a little better. We did get federal disaster recognition. I'm not going to say aid. I'll say recognition. The other day, you're hearing this probably a few days after I'm taping this. I'm taping this, just so you know, on March 26th. You're hearing this portion of the show. The interview, of course, that you heard was taped several days prior to that. But anyway, they are on the brink, and she is working her ass off. Many of her colleagues have already tested positive for coronavirus. They are undersupplied. Masks are short. Respirators are short. Depending, again, on when you're hearing this, we may have already kind of hit that tipping point where our capacity to deal with what's going on in the hospitals in New Orleans and the surrounding area is not able to deal with it. The news that broke today when I'm taping this is that the convention center is going to be converted to those that are recuperating. A lot of this is bodies, and there are not enough bodies out there. My daughter, my stepdaughter, is one of those bodies that's out there risking herself to give quality care. So what I want to do is give a shout out to my oldest stepdaughter, Tyler, who is a true hero in all of this, as are her colleagues, all of our first responders, all of our medical professionals. Frankly, everybody that's working in businesses that are still open, keeping our critical needs alive, those people are true heroes. The response from our federal government has been lacking. I think we know that. If you don't see that, I'm sorry, you're kind of an idiot. I do want to give some credit to some of our local officials that are far more competent in giving proper advice, but this is where I'm going to go with this simply, is that please do practice social distancing. Please do listen to good advice. Please do listen to science, because that is really the truth, and that's what's going to get us through this. And please do honor those that are putting their life and well-being on the line, like my stepdaughter, Tyler, to keep us healthy and try and keep us safe and try and at least, if anything, marshal our way through this so that we come out on the other side. Tyler, I love you. That's our parting shot. Here's to you.